C1C. Number 6A.
Let us summarize what we have done up to now. We have said, in case we would have been reading the text, each one by himself, as we have been doing that many, many times, would we have known what is in the chapter? I guess we wouldn't. Reducing divine metaphysics to a system is a way of understanding the subject. Now, only if we reduce that whole text to those 7 captions, we feel that we are already getting hold and the command on the subject of creation. Because now, even if you wouldn't look down to your notes and just would think now, oh, I remember, creation builds up that whole subject in 7 big subjects. I know they run along the subject of the Word of God, the 7 synonymous terms, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. You already could reconstruct for yourself actually the overall meaning of it. Now, without looking, you would see, yes, what does she has to say, what creation is from the point of view of mind? And you would say, well, mind creates only ideas. And therefore we have a creation of ideas. And if we are going to define that creation of ideas from the point of view of spirit, we would say, and this creation of ideas is the only substantial creation there is. It's spiritually substantial. And from the point of view of soul, because we know what soul is, because we know that soul is never in anything, we would know that therefore that creation of ideas that is substantial is never in any material creation, is never in any material form, is never finite, is always infinite. And at that point, we would say to ourselves, but the chapter is at the point of intersection of accepting the realm of ideas. Because the word, horizontally, you know, says we must accept the proposition. Therefore, we would say, oh-ho, I must accept that. How can I accept that? And I would know that principle says, you know, you have the right to do that, what principle does. If principle has established a creation that is absolutely of the nature only of ideas that are spiritual and unlimited, then you can do that too. Or you have to do that. Therefore, that principle as life, truth and love says, all right, accept only an ideational universe. Therefore, as the fatherhood of life, always see everywhere, wherever you look, whatever you do, only always see a creation of ideas. Lift your thought out of the mortal concept and see that you can call a new world into being, a creation of ideas. Fix your gaze on that creation of ideas. Look only at the creation of ideas. You see, that's fatherhood, that projecting out, giving to the universe an ideational meaning instead of a material meaning. And therefore, as truth, it would say, do not only project in life out in the universe the fact that the universe is ideational, but accept it also for yourself, that you yourself are a creation of ideas. And so accept for yourself an ideational creation. And in love it would say, express that motherhood sense which says, therefore I tend that universe of idea, I love that universe of idea, I include in that universe of idea all ideas, I never exclude any idea. I see my universe as me in perfect completion, in perfection. And I would express the motherhood sense to the creation. Is that clear? Sorry, you have no chance to say no. Yeah. Now, these are seven tones that are easily to be seen and to be retained. There is nothing difficult about it, because we know the seven, therefore we can easily retain it. Therefore, from this point on, you see, just keep that overall picture in mind. No matter what we are going to discuss afterwards, the further details of that chapter, this is no more so important as just these seven tones, which show us a very logical line of reasoning and a very pure creation. So, we take the textbook. I want to start reading the text and think loud. And just try to read now the text in a categorical way and interpret the text into the language of spirit. The chapter starts with a biblical epigraph, also usually called a scriptural note, and there it is said, "Thy throne is established of old. Thou art from everlasting." Put into synonymous terms, I know now this is a biblical expression to show that thy throne, that is the principle, is established of old, is established, that principle is eternal life. So I know that the throne of being is a principle, life. Thou art from everlasting life, without beginning, without end. I know now that Mrs. Eddy is going to give us a kind of description of the divine principle of creation that is from ever to ever, that is at the point of life. And if I ask myself on which category or level of consciousness is she stating this point, I see that it is from an absolute standpoint. This is only possible from an absolute standpoint. It takes in no time concept. It's from everlasting to everlasting. It's established of old. Therefore, it is an absolute statement. And so I have in my mind already a sense, here Mrs. Eddy will tell us something from the absolute standpoint, something about the facts that are from everlasting to everlasting, that have no time sense in it. She is therefore going us to show from an absolute standpoint the principle of creation, the principle of being. The throne is established from old. What is being from everlasting to everlasting? And I am quite excited and think, I wonder how she's going to describe now this everlasting being. And then I go on to the next biblical note, and then I seem as if I would drop from that throne of grace, from thy throne that is established. And I read, "For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now." And I get the very opposite sense. that it is a creation travailing up until now. I get a time sense in it. I get the sense that this creation apparently is not established from of old, but is trying to get established, and is travailing and working quite a bit to get established. I get the very opposite standpoint. You see that? So, I am not going to investigating too much what groaning and travailing means. I'm just only hearing the category in which it is written, in the time category, therefore in the category of Christian Science level, no more on the level of absolute Christian Science. It gives me a sense that there is a development going on, that there is a working going on. It's no more like the first epigraph, everything is established, there is nothing to be done anymore. There is no, in the first epigraph, there is no creative act. Here in the second one, there is a creative process still going on up to now. I read further. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. I really feel on the first go as if this second epigraph would have nothing to do in common with the first one. I would even feel that they contradict each other, that they state two absolutely opposite positions. In the first, there is no creative act, everything is at the point of isness, and that isness is the principle of isness. And then in the second epigraph, everything is on the go, everything is in the making, all is working towards a perfect state, but it's still on the way, it's still travailers in pain. It's a painful process going on. And it says, though we have the first fruits of the Spirit, though we know that we are the sons of God, we are not the sons of God, we still travail. Though we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. And the whole subject leaves us in two absolutely, apparently, opposite standpoints. How can they wed it? What is the relationship of an absolute standpoint and a relative standpoint? What is the relationship between knowing that fundamentally creation is, from an absolute standpoint, God's own creation, absolute, perfect, complete, and on the other side, our seeking, travailing, working, groaning to be redeemed from a wrong creation and to get to the point of being received or finding the adoption of our true sonship, that we are the sons of God. So, to me, I translate that in two categories. That's for me more important than the individual word. If it says that it is groaning or if it's moaning, that doesn't matter to me a bit. If it's travailing in birth or if it's a hell of a job, it doesn't matter to me which term is used there. I just see there are two standpoints. The one is the absolute standpoint of isness, of perfection. The other one is a standpoint of continual working to the point of accepting that absolute standpoint. And as I see that, I know, oh yes, these two standpoints do not need to contradict each other, because I know now through the system that the system has levels. That therefore in science we have the level of science itself, of divine science, of absolute Christian science and Christian science, and all that is integrated into one teaching. Therefore, these two standpoints have a right. Each standpoint has its purpose, and we only have to see how they intertwine, how they interlock, how they are related. Therefore, it gives me already a certain sense of what happens really at that point of intersection of Christianity as the word, which said from the absolute standpoint we see in the matrix, from the absolute standpoint, there is a realm of ideas. You remember that's the third vertical, a realm of ideas. But from the horizontal point, it is accepting that proposition. Therefore, the first biblical note gives us more that sense that everything is already at the point of creation, of perfect creation, established creation. And the second one gives me the way of accepting that creation. We always know how Mrs. Eddy explains that fundamentally or divinely we are the sons of God, but that humanly we have to make ourselves the Son of God. These are the two standpoints which do not contradict each other. The moment we consider being in a dimensional way, we can see that those dimensions are just various stages of consciousness, but of the same reality. If we already know now, as what we have been doing through the seven subjects, we can see very easily what is said here. We can see very easily that in the first three subjects, even the fourth, we can see the perfect creation. There was in that first subject of mind, the second subject of spirit, and the third of soul and of principle, was no groaning, was no travailing in pain. It was just stating clearly the facts that are. But when we come to the fifth, sixth, and seventh subject, we'll see that that is now the groaning and travailing in birth and in pain, to the point that though we have the first fruit of spirit, we have to make ourselves the Son of God, and therefore she will show in the fifth, sixth, and seventh subject that we have to use, so to say, first good thoughts, exalted thoughts, to get hold of the creation of idea that we have in truth claim this perfect creation of idea. And then in love, very clearly she shows that though we go through tribulation and that we lose our friends and things like that, it's still so that the creation of love is at work. And therefore shows that second biblical note of how we go through a growing process humanly, through a birth process humanly, in order to accept that what has been stated in the first three or four subjects. Do you see the value of just thinking in these categories? Because, you know, very well, in every discussion among Christian scientists, you always have some who are absolutists and some who have both their feet on the ground, and they never understand each other. The absolutist will say about creation, creation is perfect, God has created everything, creation is perfect, it's of the nature of idea, and these ideas are spiritual and they are infinite, and that creation is perfect. What do you want more? There is nothing more to it. The one who has both feet on the ground says, that's very nice, but how am I going to experience it? How do I feel that this is my experience and not just something up in the air on cloud nine? And so this one will say, I have to work for it. I have to do something about it. I have to make that creation, which is absolute, my own. How am I going to make it my own? And therefore, life, truth and love in this subject will tell us how to make it our own. Which means that if we have a discussion of these two types, not one of them is right. Not one of them is right. Not the one is right who is an absolutist and says everything is already okay, everything is perfect, everything is idea, and these ideas are perfect, so what? Nor is the other one right that says, I jolly well have to make these things my own. What is right is both together. The interrelationship. Because how can we make creation our own through life, truth and love, if not in the first place we know what creation is? Or we make a false concept of creation our own. We use then the fatherhood and the motherhood, the sonship and the motherhood in a wrong way. And try then to bring into experience a wrong creation. Our own conception of creation. Therefore, only when we take in every aspect do we have the whole. And so we never are in danger to get on a tangent, off on a tangent, where the one is just an absolutist and the other is perhaps more one who is working on the relative standpoint. We need both. This example here of the chapter on creation is one of the simplest and most beautiful examples to show that. Do we see how we already know quite a bit about the whole chapter just by taking in the main categories that are here? Now, let's go and read the text of the first paragraph and see what information we get here. It says, eternal truth is changing the universe. Why does she use eternal truth? Why not divine truth? Why does she use eternal truth? And you get at once a sense, oh yes, because the scriptural note was going out from the fact that thy throne is established from old, our everlasting. Creation is of an eternal nature. And within that same sentence, you get the completely opposite standpoint, namely that which is eternal is changing. Is changing the universe. Can one change the universe if the universe is established of old and is everlasting? Shouldn't we not say it is never going to be changed and should not be changed? And again you see that in one short sentence, Mrs. Eddy gives us a vertical sense of text, namely that which is eternal, which is of eternality, thy throne is established, has, when it is translated to the human level, to the level of Christian Science, is suddenly a changing truth. So the eternal truth suddenly becomes a changing truth and changes the universe. And you can easily see that this is very typical for Mrs. Eddy, that she just goes from one level to the next when she presents something vertically. But she says, you see, there is an eternal truth, but that truth is going to change everything that is not right. It doesn't change that which is right. You see? Can you see how we must see how she takes in levels? Because if you don't take in the levels, you get the teaching that is wrong. Because the teaching then would say that which is established of all truth is going to change constantly, whereas it is unchangeable. But the moment you can reason and hear, oh yes, here she speaks vertically, it's a synchronic composition here, and you begin to see, if we have an eternal creation, that eternality has within itself the impact of changing on a human level everything that needs to be changed. And so we are expecting actually the way things should be changed. As mortals, she gives now a reason for it, or a method. As mortals drop off their mental swaddling clothes, thought expands into expression. This is the change, the expanding into expression. When does something expand into expression? When we take off the limits, when we take off the swaddling cloth, the limiting cloth, that which makes everything narrow, tight, closed in, and it's mental and not spiritual. So every point of restriction must be taken off, and as we take it off, then it expands into the unlimited. Let there be light. Let there be light. It's the perpetual demand of truth and love. It's interesting that she doesn't say let there be light is the perpetual demand of mind, as in the first day of creation, but of truth and love. Again, wonderful. If one knows the same synonymous term, what they mean, then one sees at once, oh, here she speaks about that realm of truth and love, that realm of the pre-established reality, which never changes, and therefore, again, that realm that never changes, the realm of truth and love, is always that which changes its opposite. It changes chaos into the order and discord into the order. Changes chaos into order. Yes.